L-għaw l-semija ta' Campus 103.7, Emanuel Buttigieġ u Liam Gawċi għal taħdita Clio. Bipjaċir Liam reġamija jwara li ħallin imbaħħar zewċ episodi wahdi.
Ma morġ ħazin, ma morġ ħazin.
Lele, kampajt.
Ftit gergrun, ftit gergrun.
U għadnu zanki il-metafora marittima illa li x kif ġilli namlu ħannajsa miniserje fiħdan taħdita Clio li qed
disa serje.
Fiħdan disa serje ta' taħdita Clio. Din miniserje tinsejħula l-istorja taħt il-mewġ. Għaliex fija matul dawn it-tlet episodi ħangulu nifukaw fuq storja marittima, arkeoloġija marittima ma' esperti li ħankunu qegħdin nintroduċu wkoll. Fil-fatti magħna għal dan l-episodju u dak li ħajsegwi warajh għandna lill-Professur Dan Davis. Dan Davis huwa minn Luther College fl-Istati Uniti u palissa jinsab Malta bħala koordinatur tal-2024 ta' programm ta' studji li jġib studenti minn Luther College u jqattaw semestru magħna hawnhekk l-Università ta' Malta. U fil-fatt joħsib din is-sena partikolari dan il-kohort ta' studenti. Però miegħu nifuka fuq l-ispeċjalizzazzjoni tiegħu li l-Professur Davis jgħallem il-Grek klassiku, il-Latin u l-istudji klassiċi fl-Luther College. U jispeċjalizza fl-arkeoloġija marittima, li fil-fatt kifen ħatkun it-tema ta' dawn l-episodi li għandna miegħu. Naturalment, dan l-episodju issa ħajaqleb għall-Ingliż. Dan, welcome and thank you very much for accepting our invitation to join our program.
It's my pleasure.
And today with you, we're going to explore something really fascinating. But I thought we could start with you telling us a little bit about the study of the classics, maritime archaeology, and in your case, why is the Mediterranean your area of focus? Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, I'm from Iowa, which is in the middle of the United States, very far from the ocean, either ocean. And the sea always seemed like a very far away, exotic place, a very enticing place to work. And so very early on, I was interested in getting to the ocean, but my family didn't travel. And so I had to live through books and through movies. And so when I was in high school, this is back in the 1980s, when I was in high school, I got very interested in ancient history. This is mostly from my mom. My mom was obsessed with King Tut. Tutankhamun, back in the 70s and 80s, King Tut was on tour all over the world, and he came to the U.S.
Oh, of course.
And went to all the museums. My mom dragged me to the museum, and I fell in love with the ancient world, but I was still very interested in the ocean. And so I thought, well, how can I ever have a job that involves both of those elements? And my mom kept pushing books at me, book after book on ancient Egypt. And so eventually I got interested in Egypt, but the Egyptians are very mysterious people. They're almost alien. You know, it's hard to relate based on the texts that we have, which are, you know, Book of the Dead stuff. It's hard to relate to the Egyptians. Well, then I found the ancient Greeks, and I started reading books in English, Plato and Homer, and I fell in love with the Greeks very early on, like senior in high school. And I thought, I can relate to the Greeks. I can't really relate to the Egyptians very much. It seems as if you could take a time machine and just go back, 2,500 years, and you could learn ancient Greek, you could have a normal conversation with, maybe not with Socrates, but, maybe with Pericles, or maybe one of the playwrights like Sophocles or Aeschylus or somebody. And so I fell in love with them. And through them, I fell in love with ancient texts and with archaeology. But I still had this strong interest to do something related to the sea. And so I went through my undergraduate career at various colleges and universities. I skipped around a lot. And then I eventually landed
as a real sailor.
Not yet. No, I did some time in the Navy in between all that.
Okay.
As a diver, deep sea diver, and just to pursue my diving interests. But But when I finally finished university, it was with a classics degree. Mm-hmm. And then I decided this is what I want to do the rest of my life, is somehow mix classics with the ancient world. And that brings me around to the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean, of course, is the theater of seafaring for ancient Greece, for ancient Rome. And I thought, how can I get involved with maybe shipwrecks or harbor sites or something like that? And then I saw a show on television that was on the Uluburun shipwreck, which is a household word over here, but in the U.S. is completely unknown practically. The Uluburun shipwreck was this late Bronze Age shipwreck, dates to around 1300 B.C., with a really rich cargo. It was found off the coast of Turkey, a place called Uluburun, Cape of the Sparrows, or near the Cape of the Sparrows. I think it means Great Cape. But Uluburun, the shipwreck that lies at about 170, 180 feet, was carrying a rich cargo of metal ingots, right? Copper, tin, just the right ratio to make bronze, hence the Bronze Age. And but also had just tons of other stuff on it, literally tons of other stuff on it, like glass and exotic goods from far away. Amber, for example, from the North Sea. You know, ostrich eggs that were made into jewelry boxes from North Africa. It was just one of the most intriguing things I'd ever heard of. And then I saw these scientists, these archaeologists diving on it, and I thought, how can I do what they do? So I read up on the Mediterranean as much as I could with the library I had, and found a grad school where they do this, where they train students to excavate shipwrecks. And then came to the Mediterranean over and over and over again. And I've been coming here every year for the last, well, let's just say 1,000 years. Yeah.
Well, this I think the love for the sea, I was really interested when you said I could relate to the Greeks. It happened to me with the 18th century. I can relate to the 18th century.
It's fine. It's a sort of gut feeling. I mean, there's nothing rational about it somehow, but...
Yes, it's not... you go, I relate to these people a little bit more than. Uh-huh. And you mentioned who would you like to talk to in ancient Greece? For me, it's always has been Herodotus. I want to... why did you start writing history?
That's right.
And then, now because of you, we have to do this as well. But bringing you back to Malta, why Malta? What's happening in Malta? What is the connection between you and Malta and the University of Malta? I'm sure that our listeners would like to know a little bit more about this.
Absolutely. And first of all, it's a pleasure to be here in Malta, not just here in the studio, but actually on in your nation, on this island. It's a beautiful place filled with beautiful people.
Our good days.
Oh, you do. You do. And today is one of those days, for sure, with the bright sun. I came to Malta because my college actually has a Malta program where they send students here, usually about a dozen students, every spring semester to take classes at the University of Malta. When I first arrived at my college, this is back in 2011, I heard right away that they had a Malta program. And I asked my department head, should I apply to that? Can I direct that program? And he said, you can, but I would wait a few years. He said, you know, you need to get publications out. You need to do committee work, you know, all those things to chase after tenure. And so I put it off, and I put it off.
So Malta is a glamorous posting.
It was, yes. It was highly desired. It was competitive. You have to apply, and it has to go through a committee, and then you're chosen based on your essay that you have to write. Like, how are you gonna, how are you gonna direct the program? What do you want to do? What are you gonna do with the students when you get there? So we have a travel course where we travel around and see more of the Mediterranean than Malta. But we do see a lot on Malta, too. My kids, I had two children. They grew up. They moved out. And all of a sudden, I had some free time. And I, so I applied for the 2024 spring semester, and the committee saw fit to choose me to come over here. So I'm very grateful to be here.
Now,
no, go ahead.
Okay. So today we want to focus on the Nautilus project that you're involved in. So what is that? What is the Nautilus project?
The Nautilus project began back in 2000 and probably 2007, 2008. At that time, I was a graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. And I had heard that Dr. Robert Ballard, the guy who found the Titanic, that's what he'll always be known for, but he's also a renowned oceanographer. He somehow acquired a research vessel, named it the Nautilus, and then brought it over to Turkey to refit it, to do some underwater archaeology in Turkish waters. He had a connection with Turkey back in those days, and Turkey's always been sort of a hotbed or a center of underwater archaeology. Mm. So it seemed like a logical place for him to put the Nautilus for its refit. So he refitted this this North Sea oil patch vessel, or I think it was maybe a fishing vessel. I forget now. But anyway, it's a nice little ship, and he brought over some of the technology from the U.S. to put on board. I'm talking about the remotely operated vehicles, Hercules and Argus, which are this tandem remotely operated system, and some other technology to do deep sea exploration in the Mediterranean. So he was here from about 2008 to 2013. And the whole time, he kept inviting me back every year to be the marine archaeologist for the project. And what was our program? Ocean exploration. So the Nautilus expeditions are simply go see what's there.
Nice.
And I love that because it's pure exploration.
Yes.
Now, we're not just putting a robot anywhere. We're looking at things with sonar, and we're trying to find things that look interesting and promising. And one of his main interests was shipwrecks. And, of course, this is why he invited me. By that time, I was a marine archaeologist and really interested in shipwrecks, not only shipwrecks, but also deep sea archaeology, like pushing the frontiers of underwater archaeology. How can we do things outside of scuba diving? Can robots actually excavate a shipwreck, or can we only take pictures? Well, Hercules demonstrated, this is this 2-ton workhorse, this robot.
Hence the name. No?
hence the name, exactly. It's tough. Big arms. It actually could excavate. We designed it, we engineered it so that it could take the place of an underwater archaeologist on the seabed. And so we had no problem finding shipwrecks. So in the 5 seasons that I was working with them, 5 summers, we found 46 shipwrecks off the Turkish coast. Almost all of them were ancient. Hmm. They range in date from the 6th century BC all the way to about the 6th century AD. And there's a few that are a little bit older, or more recent, I should say, than that. And we actually, going back to 2007, using a different ship, we demonstrated that we could excavate shipwrecks in the deep sea. We didn't fully excavate a shipwreck with a robot. We could not fully excavate it. It's just a matter of time. We only had so many days on the site that we could afford, because research ships are very expensive.
I can imagine.
Yes.
But in that time, we moved a lot of sediment. We did a lot of mapping. We recovered artifacts from one of the shipwrecks, the Sinope D shipwreck, in the Black Sea side of Turkey. And it's one of the most perfectly preserved shipwrecks ever found. And so, I'm proud to say that I was on the team. Wasn't the engineer, but I was on the team that did I would say the first, if not among the first, on deep sea underwater archaeology excavations.
Mm, wow. And you mentioned the name of Robert Ballard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think we would want to hear a bit more about
that. How is it working with a legend?
he is a legend.
I ask that about Manuel. You know, people tell me, how is it working with Manuel? It's amazing.
Of course.
we walk among giants.
Yes, you know, exactly.
We really do. Robert Ballard was my hero in high school. You know, Titanic was found in high school.
Of course.
And he was on all the news programs. He hosted National Geographic. He seemed like a really interesting person. And then, you know, life got in the way. I didn't really watch or keep track of Robert Ballard all that much. And then he started finding shipwrecks pretty close to Malta off of a place called Skirky Bank. This is west of Sicily.
Okay.
In the Strait. He started finding Roman shipwrecks in the deep sea. And then some archaeologists who worked with him published books on it. And then I started to pay more attention. And then when I heard that he was going to be in the Black Sea working, I happened to be working in the Black Sea at the same time. Mm. And he heard my name through somebody else. And so he just one day called me at my house. And so I answered the phone. Back in those days, you had landlines. I answered the phone and I said, hello. He goes, hi, is this Dan? Yeah. This is Bob Ballard. And I remember I was stunned.
Yeah, of course.
And it sounded just like him. And I thought, wow.
Somebody's winding
me
up.
Calling me. Yeah, exactly. At first I thought it was
a prank.
Then he I was just in shock. And as I stood there and listened, he told me about the program in the Black Sea that he wanted to initiate to do some deep sea archaeology there beyond what he'd already done back in 2000. This is in 2006 when he called me. And then I got to work with him. Now, what's it like working with him? Well, they call him Hurricane Bob for a reason.
Hurricane Bob.
He sweeps into a room. He commands the room. And he's always interesting. There's no way that you can outstory Bob. Bob has the best stories ever. And he's a storyteller. And he's really good at telling stories. And so I would just listen. You know, my dad taught me that, you know, it's better to remain silent and look the fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Right. That's, I think that's one of the sayings of Confucius. And so I would just listen.
I'll try to remember that one.
And absorb. And I just absorbed it all. And I just found it tremendously interesting and fascinating to watch how Bob works. He's a scientist first and foremost. Some people think of him as a shipwreck hunter, you know, and certainly he does and is still doing a lot of that. But it's not for treasure hunting. It's for science. Like, what kind of science can we get out of this? What can we learn?
It's knowledge.
It's knowledge. And knowledge is the most precious commodity that he's ever produced, whether it's in oceanography, seafloor spreading, and that sort of thing, way back in the 80s, 70s, or finding the oldest, best-preserved shipwreck in the Black Sea, you know, or finding Titanic.
What are these projects that you're working on with Dr. Ballard?
Well, so I'm no longer working with him because he's moved on, right? So Bob learned fairly early in the process that there's very little money to be raised in shipwreck archaeology. It's hard to raise the big money that you need to run an oceanographic research vessel. When I say big money, these ships cost anywhere from $50,000 to $60,000 per day to operate.
Wow.
So to be at sea, you need to raise millions of dollars. And so back in the U.S., the National Science Foundation or the Defense Department or the NEH, any of these big grant agencies, they don't fund shipwreck searches. They fund hard sciences. And so he left the Mediterranean and he went to the Pacific, and that's where I believe he still is with the Nautilus. And he's doing important research on ocean chemistry, you know, seabed morphology, volcanism, and those sorts of projects, those sort of hard science oceanography projects. Does he still do shipwrecks? Yeah, I think so. Every now and then you'll hear that he's working on a shipwreck project. Yeah.
Amazing.
So you were working with him on this shipwreck in the Black Sea?
In the Black Sea and the Aegean.
And the Aegean.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about these two shipwrecks. Can we learn a little bit about the Aegean shipwreck, for example?
Well, sure. We worked off this ancient city called Knidos. Mm. Knidos is in southwest Turkey.
Yes.
It's at the end of this really long finger peninsula called Dacia.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
it's particularly famous for its Venus, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yes.
Knidos. Uh-huh.
The very famous Praxiteles Venus of Knidos. Beautiful archaeological ruins here, and so scenic. It's surrounded on three sides by the Aegean Sea. And so we had this idea that Knidos, being at the very entrance into the Aegean from the eastern Mediterranean, might have a lot of shipwrecks.
Of course.
It's a bottleneck. So the straits there go between the islands of, well, Rhodes, Kassos, Simi's right there, Knossos, Nisiros, rather. And we thought, as a bottleneck, there'd be a lot of traffic focused in here.
I love this train of thought.
There should be a lot.
This is how you guess.
And so that was our reasoning. And so we got the permit. We engaged some Turkish colleagues to help us out. And some observers from the Turkish government were on all of our voyages. And we started running the sonar back and forth, finding shipwrecks. And we found basically a shipwreck a day.
Jesus.
Sometimes we found two shipwrecks in a 24-hour period. They're everywhere. And so in the end, we found...
With dates ranging from...
6th century BC until the modern period. I think the most recent one was a German sailboat from, 1990.
Okay.
But before that, there's, nothing between, say, 1400 and 2000 or 1990.
Wow. Okay.
And you said that you had representatives from the Greek side and from the Turkish side with you?
No, just the Turkish side. So a lot of Greek islands about, but we worked only in Turkish waters.
Right. Mm-hmm. That in itself must be interesting and
yes.
and a special sea of its own that you have to navigate.
Luckily, I didn't operate at the level where I had to be a diplomat. I just showed up as part of the watch team. And directed the robot drivers, there's two, to do, what I asked them to do. Uh-huh. Go film that, so we would put the robot down on all the sonar targets, find the shipwreck, and then we had to document it. Our permit didn't allow us to recover any artifacts. All we could do is video and take pictures.
Uh-huh.
But luckily, Hercules has a lot of really great cameras on board, including HD cameras.
So can I ask you which was the most exciting thing that you found during this let's say exploration?
We found, so as being from Malta, you both know that most of the ancient shipwrecks in the Mediterranean are amphora carriers, right? They're carrying these clay jars that held wine, olive oil, fish paste, whatever.
I tease Prof. Gumby in that, come on, just give me something new. I'm tired of amphora.
But that is actually what we found the most of, right?
Of course.
Almost all of them were these amphora carriers. I'm working on one now for publication. We're still working on them. We're still trying to get them published scientifically.
Yeah, so at the moment now we want to focus on a Roman shipwreck, right?
Oh, we could, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So he asked what my favorite shipwreck was.
Right, yes, yes.
And my favorite shipwreck is one we call Knidos B, the letter B, because we found A through Z. We found 26 shipwrecks just off of Knidos. I'm glad we didn't find any more.
I was going to say.
What would happen after Z? It's like A.
You need the German alphabet in that case. Like they have extra characters.
Yeah.
Or the Maltese one.
Or just start it over. Alpha, alpha, right? Or AA. And that would have been boring. But so Knidos B turns out to be the oldest shipwreck that we found. And it's an amphora carrier. I'm sorry to disappoint you. But it's early, and the amphoras were from the island of Samos.
Whoa.
And Samos is one of the early powerhouses of ancient Greece. In the Archaic period, they were really prolific. They're known for two famous people, Pythagoras, mm-hmm. one of them, the famous Greek scientist, and the other one was Polycrates, who was one of the famous tyrants of ancient Greece, mm-hmm. and who Herodotus talks a lot about. Tell some really salacious stories about Polycrates.
As he usually does.
He does. And so this wreck was carrying so many amphoras that we thought this is moving the date of the cargo ship further back in time than we previously understood. We thought that bulk cargoes were not started until maybe a century later. And this moves it back into the period of the Archaic period. It's a little bit earlier. And that's pretty exciting. We're still trying to work on publishing the shipwreck, but it's taking some time.
It always does.
It
always does.
Especially the teaching schedule.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, we published about 20 other wrecks already. And so we're working, and the wreck I'm working on right now is called Knidos W. So it's the 23rd shipwreck that we found. And it is the most humble shipwreck I think we've ever found. Humble. There's not much on it. There's two amphoras, so you would be pleased with that. One jar and maybe a little jug. But the rest of it is tile, roofing tile.
Ooh, oh, right. Tegola.
Yeah, tegula, exactly. And I didn't know much about, you know, building materials from the ancient world, to be honest. But I'm quickly becoming a student.
Yeah, student of
that. Yes. And so there's a conference coming up in Austria next month, and I plan to present this one at the conference. It's when I say it's humble, it's only the tiles are about a meter square, and there are about 400 of them. So, you know, maybe a 20 by 20 meter building.
A building.
Pretty sizable building that it could cover.
And it's all coming out of the sea.
Yeah. And who, you know, where did it come from? Well, we don't know. The jars date. Okay. The jars are Canadian. They come from the local city that we found the wreck off of.
Interesting.
Where was it going? We don't know.
Who knows?
We don't know. All we can do is speculate.
Well, as always, time flies. And Professor Dan Davies, thank you for being with us today. On behalf of myself and Manuel, we would like to once again thank you. Mm-hmm. And
but we have another
back.
One coming.
Yes, we will be back next week to talk a little bit more about this very exciting career you are having in the Mediterranean and the Black Sea
and beyond
and beyond. But we're going to be concentrating on the Mediterranean once again. Well, thank you, listeners, for being with us. And myself, Liam Gauci, and Emmanuel Buttigieg would like to thank you. And we'll see you next week.